Welcome back to another episode. I think we're at 296. Joe, how you doing?
Well, it's hard to say, Tim. Heritage America is exiting stage right so quickly. I don't even know if I'll wake up in the morning and sort of recognize the world I live in. California, the reparations now has gone through a committee. And they're saying that $1.2 billion for every black California.
$1.2 billion for every black?
$1.2 million for each. $2 million.
Black. Okay.
Now this is, how are they going to do that? Who's black? How long get their resident? I mean, if it's open to all blacks, then why would every black in the world come here, and just pick up their $1.2 million and take off? There's the issue of like, where is the money going to come from? I mean, there's no money in the
state. Now, California is never a slave state, right?
No.
If I get my history right.
Yeah. It's just, it's just, you don't know what to make of it. It is conceivable that they'll try to do it. In other words, a lot of people are saying, no, there's all these, this is just a committee fantasy. It's not going to go anywhere. Well, I don't know. We'll see. I think actually as I see the development of the clown world, it would fit right in.
Well, instead of slavery, why don't they just claim all blacks live in fear of being beaten up by cops, and that fear causes anxiety, and they can sue? Sure.
Well, the fact is that very few of them are actually living in fear of being beaten up by cops, because if you watch the videos of the sideshows in Oakland, you'll see that no one is afraid of police whatsoever. I actually saw a video of not just reckless, but criminally dangerous driving in the Oakland streets. And it wasn't just one car, it's like five or six cars. They do these, kind of wheelies, and they're spinning around in the intersection.
Drag racing, yeah.
And there was a police car that was basically driven away, the drag racers and the mob simply had more authority, and the police didn't even attempt to create order. So that's the Bay Area. And then if you've seen the businesses who are leaving, it's just a complete epidemic.
Here's a 35% in San Francisco, 35% of the retail are vacant now. Yeah,
Oakland's I think is even worse. But you're just not able to have a retail business in the classic American sense, where you open to the sidewalk and expect people to come in and behave in, the good old fashioned heritage American boring way, where they don't steal things and try to kill you, and they pay for what they want out of your store. I mean, that relationship really is at least in San Francisco, I would have to say it's gone. And so, when I say Heritage America is, evaporating, I mean, I'm not exaggerating. That's just what's happening.
Well, maybe we just have to all start shopping at Amazon more.
Right? Well, unfortunately, that's exactly right. And then we have to use, video connections. We'll be trapped in our homes. Amazon will still be delivering things. And what kind of world is that? This was, we had talked a couple years ago about this. My friend Rob, who is a longtime family-owned businesses in Seattle, and he said that the only real law in Seattle that he could see were the Amazon security people. He said that at that time, I don't know, this was over a year ago, so I don't know what really happened to the city in the intern, but he said that really they were the ones you had to appeal to for order.
So that, I guess the real sovereign now are these corporations.
So it's kind of, it's getting pretty wild. I just don't know who's going to be living in these cities. The nation's in for a really brutal decade, I would imagine, even beyond that, while all this gets sorted out. I mean, What seems to be happening is a kind of resegregation, where you have Soros-funded DAs. Like, for example, just take Oakland as an example, where they have a Soros-funded Black DA, a woman, she is 100% in favor of decarceration. She doesn't want to put people in prison for almost anything. And so this is not an environment. I mean, you know, she doesn't really give an explanation how the economy is going to work, or even how like family production or about anything, how anything is going to work. She just has that single note that there was just a high percentage of young Black males being arrested, and that's the problem in and of itself. So we have to fix that by not arresting them. Mm-hmm. All of the other issues are not things that she's ever spoken about. And so, as I said, what's happening is a kind of resegregation where the people who have money, a lot of like middle-class Asian whites and even Latinos, are just bailing. I think Blacks too, I would imagine they'd get the heck out if they could. And you're just going to have a greater and greater concentration of the decarceration world. You know what I mean? It's just, you're going to get past a certain point. You really have to be tough to live on the streets. You know, you look at the people doing the sideshows. There was a video of this one white guy who I don't know what the circumstances were. I've heard a run rumor that he had a business in the air and he was upset and he tried to get them to stop. He was yelling at them and they just came out a mob and just brutally beat him. I'm not sure he lived. I mean, he was just knocked unconscious and then beaten on the ground. And the mob was really had a kind of bloodlust. The video is on YouTube. People want to check it out. So that's, you know, and of course, no police, no response, no, you know, the mayor or DA, no one complains about this. So you've really got in that area, you know, it's a brand new kind of reality where you've had, you know, the whites now are have no agency. You know, there's really the political system works against them. They're there because of, I think a lot of them have either, you know, real estate or business ties. But obviously that's not going to work in the long run. So everyone just has to leave. And then what's left, they'll have to have, you know, a lot of government largesse. I mean, I have no idea what's the business plan for these people. You know, how are they going to, I mean, I guess reparations is the business plan.
Yeah, I don't think they've thought that through. I don't think they've ever.
That doesn't work out, I honestly have no idea how these guys are going to.
I mean, someone like the DA of Oakland, for her, there's always been, you know, the government to pay for things, right? To pay for her salary, to pay for other bureaucrats' salaries, so that she has no appreciation.
Unlimited wealth.
Support a tax base, which means you have to support law and order, respect property, and respect people, you know, and that's, if you don't do that, then everything falls apart. Then she's just there, you know, on the court steps screaming about racism.
Yeah.
And incarceration, yeah. You know. Yeah.
Racism,
even though that's her job, especially in a city like Oakland, when it's a high crime rate, her job would be to increase the incarceration rates, because that's the immediate problem. You know, her job isn't to figure out society's ills. She's not a sociologist. She's not a, you know, she's there to enforce the law. You know, but nevertheless, you know, I've seen her, and she, you know, she's what you'd expect. And so, you know, a city like Oakland deserves democracy, and they give the people what they want. As H.O. Makeman said, they deserve to get a good heart.
Well, you know, don't you think that this is really just another example of sort of the great society insertion? If you think about all of the ideas that were in back of the great society programs, I mean, they were completely ludicrous, right? There was no citation of science, you know, that this was anything, this was going to work. It was just this insertion of capital in a certain way into the, you know, inner city families. And it was definitely going to drive the male out of the household. Yeah.
So, basically, it was a very crude analysis that somehow, because there are poor people and there are people that are better off or wealthy, it's a simple mathematical equation, just transferring wealth.
Yeah, right.
And then you don't have to worry about the details or human nature and what the various problems that may exist. Yeah.
But, you know, my point is that just descended into abyss. You know, you end up with the baby daddy, you know, with the family gone. And
yeah.
drugs and violence and very low education levels and all of the progress that the African-American community, the dramatic upward progress that they'd made since the end of World War I till like 1960, it's gone. It just disappeared.
Well, the narrative, problem is you had development of the civil rights movement, which was an op, and the racial narrative of the civil rights movement was that blacks were aggrieved and victims and whites were guilty. And it's as simple as that. And so it's, yeah, they said, well, it isn't that simple, actually, because it's much more complicated. There are a lot of, there were always a lot of problems with blacks in terms of violence and crime and sexual. They needed to be, they needed to follow the law. And if they didn't follow, they needed to be punished. They didn't, you got this. And we go through these things in the 60s and 70s, and we're going through it again. It's where people relax and you don't get law and order, unless you're willing to enforce the law. And especially if you create these, you know, polyglot diverse cities where simply you either, you know, if you're going to have diversity, you're going to need an authoritarian state to impose a law. You don't get, you don't, otherwise you need a, you know, a homogeneous community. And that way you have high trust. So you don't need a strong police presence. So the one goes with the other. It's, you know, it's a shock to a lot of people. But
you can't have neither, which is what Oakland is at the moment. I mean, you know, and so that my question is like, where do you think this will end? I think it's almost infinite. I mean, I think it just goes, as far as the oligarchs are concerned, the more debased the inhabitants are, the better. The less education level, the better. Obviously, the less family structure, the better.
Yes.
The more pornography, the more drugs. Everything that is, you know, the cultural standards of the street, of people on the street in Oakland, is destructive. And so if the oligarchs are pushing and the people are being mind controlled into thinking that, well, there's a rationale for us, you know, we had to suffer through racism, and so there's nothing wrong with us, you know, basically taking government largesse, and the violence on the street will somehow work itself out when racism goes away. But it never goes away. And then what do you have eventually? I mean, the only kind of sort of parallel to it would be kind of like Escape from New York, the Carpenter film, you know, you have just walls around it. And but I kind of think it'll be different than that. I think that the walls will actually be around the enclaves.
Well, you know, be like Latin America. That's kind of what they're creating.
Yeah, that's right.
California, yeah. And it goes with, that's what the oligarchs want. They want to destroy the middle class, and you have these rich enclaves, and everyone's poor around them, and they're disorganized, and they have low agency. They're not, no threat to the political structure, and it's a one-party state, and they've assured that with, you know, immigration, and they chased, you know, the white majority out, which was the middle class. And so this is the type of political culture you have and the type of political system. And it's all the mayhem and you're seeing is obviously it's desired by the political authorities. I said it wouldn't happen.
But you know, I think that the real tension will come when the woke culture interfaces with the kind of decarcerated children of the great society, the people on the street, you know, who are violent and drag racing and running over people and stuff, because I don't think they're getting along. You know, I think the woke agenda and the woke culture needs a lot of government, you know.
Well, it kind of like these things down in Miami, there was a street where someone painted the rainbow flag on a crosswalk, the rainbow flag on a city street celebrating gay pride. Then one morning they woke up and there were skid marks on it, tires, and they were investigated as a hate crime. So, you know, it is a street.
Yeah.
And so that people are going to walk on it. And why are you painting a rape? Why are you using the city's public streets to celebrate sodomy? But never, that wasn't questioned. That there are really, that the news reports like, really, really, who did this? Are you kidding me? But you know, in that case, you're not allowed to have drag racing, leave skid marks, whatever. You have to gently cross, you know, drive over the rainbow flag that celebrates sodomy, which is what America's all about now, apparently. But yeah, I mean, there was a, interesting, someone sent me a video. There was a thing, a contrast between a subway in New York and a subway, I think it was in Hungary. And the subway in Hungary, everyone's quiet. There's a pleasant conversation. People are reading. Then, of course, on the subway in New York, it's complete chaos. Now, you can say these videos are taken, you know, the worst example, the best example, but I suspect that the subways in Europe, particularly in Hungary, where there's more homogeneity, a lot more peaceful.
I'd say they're very accurate. I mean, I go in the subways a lot. I have family members there, and so I visit New York quite a bit. And also in Europe, I take subways. There is a big difference. So I will say they are getting closer to being parallel, because a lot of subways in Europe are getting rough now.
Well, that goes with diversity. New York, from what I understand,
they certainly changed Paris.
Subways were not notorious for crime up until the early 1960s, right?
No,
it goes with the demographic shift in New York too.
Yeah,
you know, there was that incident earlier this week where a street performer, they call him, but a homeless man named Jordan Neely was restrained, put in a headlock by two or three gentlemen on the train who got tired of him. He had been harassing, threatening, throwing things at people, physically assaulting people. In fact, before his death, there was a warrant out for his arrest for assaulting a 67-year-old lady in 2021, November 2021. There's a warrant out. So they restrained him. Finally, someone acted up. Most people just looked the other way, but they got tired of it. And there's a 24-year-old former Marine that put him in a headlock to keep him. Jordan Neely was taken to the hospital. He apparently passed away from his injuries, something with the neck, compression of the neck, supposedly.
Yeah.
Who knows what drugs he was on, whatever. Anyway, he was a public nuisance. He'd been arrested 44 times. He's age 30. 44 times. Now, why was he still out? Now, of course, I'm sure he wasn't caught every time he committed assault. He's probably guilty of 100 or maybe even 1,000 crimes. But anyway, this is the type of man. Of course, we've been treated all types of stories about incidents on the subway, people being pushed in front of cars, assaulted. We have endless amount of videos of women being punched, people just endless men being punched by these people. And usually they come from one group. They're Black men that are doing this in New York City. Crime is out of control. There's a grand jury that's looking into charges, trying to charge this guy. What was his name? He was identified. Yeah, Daniel Penny. Now, he also had two other assistants or assailants, I guess you want to think it's a criminal. So who knows what's going to happen there? There's already protests, no riots yet, but they're protesting, calling it murder. Of course, the media is covering it. And it's kind of funny. You watch the media coverage of it. And the way the media covers it, they're completely, completely either indifferent or aloof or just completely dishonest about the reality on the subways, reality and reality of street crime in New York. Where he was a street performer. He was just performing. You know, he was intimidating people. And, you know, one minute they report this story, then they report some horrible crime that's being committed in New York City. And there was this brought to mind the story of Bernard Goetz. Remember early 1984, 85? When he shot four men who were trying to mug him on the subway. And I was listening to the show Black Pill. He did a retrospective on it. And he actually played Bernard Goetz's testimony, or these videotaped statement to the police. He turned himself in eventually. And Bernard Goetz is lecturing the police and the lady prosecutor that's there, saying, "Ma'am, you have no idea what it's like out there. Ladies, why'd you do this? Why did I do this?" Now, Bernard Goetz had been victimized. He'd been beaten up, assaulted. I think he had kneecap broken and thrown through a window by three or four Black guys 2 or 3 years before. So he started carrying a gun. And this is like 3 years later, he's assaulted again. And what happened was, he's on a subway, four guys surround him, and they say, "Hey, how you doing?" And they ask him for money. Now, I'm listening to the news report. He was playing contemporary news reports, or, you know, at the time. And the news report describes one of the teenagers as soliciting money from Bernard Goetz. Right. Soliciting. Please, sir, will you please give me some money? No, it was a mugging. And Bernard Goetz talks about it, says they had surrounded me, and the look in their eye, and says, everyone knows what I'm talking about. He goes through this, you know, 2 hours, he just spills it all. You know, he says that, you know, they were toying me with the same way a predator toys with its prey. And I wasn't going to take it anymore. In fact, you know, I shot him. I would have shot him again if I hadn't run out of bullets. I'm glad I did it. So there it is. That was the statement to the police. Of course, the public opinion turned in Bernard Gates' favor. I think the only member of the four teens or youths who were going to mug him who didn't commit a crime was the one he shot and paralyzed. Other ones had gone on to commit crimes. One actually raped a woman a couple months later who was pregnant. One was in prison. One was already dead or something. You know, he eventually, I think, got off on the major charges, was found guilty of illegal possession of a firearm, had to pay like a $5,000 fine. He did lose a civil lawsuit to the paralyzed kid. He never paid it out. Of course, he declared bankruptcy, but that was the case. But I was watching the videotape, and again, here we are back again. And then they were playing, old newsreels or footage of violence on New York City subways. Same thing. It's the exact same thing. And just letting it happen. And, let's face it, if more of these people get shot or get beaten up or restrained or die, you're going to have a lot less of it. But they're just letting it happen, you know.
Well, the interesting problem that is in front of us is, you know, what is appropriate self-defense at this point? We're going to have to, obviously this, culture is not standing still. We're moving very quickly. Mm-hmm. And so imagine in 5 years, if it's, five times, Chicago had what, like 300 carjackings, thereabouts, and they had, I think, two or three arrests. So carjacking is no longer a crime in the sense that it's not something you're arrested for. So if it was 10 times that, it was 3,000. Now, you can't really even go to the grocery store unless you're armed. And so you have this problem is in front of us as to, you talk about vigilantism being illegal, but then you have the implied and explicit right of self-defense. I don't think they can take that away from us.
Yeah, it's not really vigilantism. If, like, for example, these three men on the subway where they're preventing this guy from committing a crime. He's in the process of committing a crime by assaulting people, harassing them. That's like they're just dealing with the situation. Then they're not going out and after the fact, giving him a citizen's trial and hanging him. They're just stopping a crime from happening. So when you apply vigilance, Bernard Gates made a good point in the video. He says, listen, when this shooting occurred, there was all over the press, media was covering it. The police had a special task force to find out who was this shooter. The media was saying, will he strike again, as if he's the threat, as opposed to the four people who assaulted him, who were going to assault him. No, they're the threat. It's not the guy who shot them in self-defense. They were going to mug him and probably do worse to him. They were found with sharpened screwdrivers and all that. So it was obvious what they were out to do, what they were doing. But the media, and Bernard Gates made the point, and he was saying, is if I had not had a gun and they had robbed me, beat me up, or shot me, I'd just be another statistic. Would be no news about it whatsoever, no attention whatsoever. A citizen defends himself and it becomes this big news story. There's something really way out of whack here, but that's the problem.
It is out of whack. And how can this be resolved? The forces that produce the inner city, typically young male who is a nihilist, are just getting worse. Mm-hmm. Their family is gone. The extended family is gone. All you need to create real chaos is to put hunger into that mix. And it just would be explosive. So you get into this idea, in terms of like the explicit right of self-defense, you have to remember that extends to the defense of others. So yes, this is how the law, in the United States envisions it, is that you have the right of self-defense, but just because they're beating up your friend or your wife or something doesn't mean that just because it's not you, you don't have the right to defend someone else. So you have the right to defend other people. And in the case of the New York subway case with the Marine who got the guy in the headlock, it's just one of these areas where I think it'll be a political decision. The courts, obviously are now making political decisions. There is, have affirmative action, for example, but then beyond that, you have on the non-carceration or incarceration DAs, that I think that they hate white people.
If you're white, they'll certainly no harm incarcerating you.
Right. So the thing is, now you have such a complicated legal situation for whites and Asians, or even Latinos that want to defend themselves. Our bougie blacks, they would probably be on the chopping block as well, I imagine. So, my point is there's this whole new protocol that will have to be developed during the period where the resegregation occurs. Because in my opinion, Tim, this isn't going to last that long. I mean, you just can't have businesses in places where there are no shoplifting laws. And so all the businesses will leave, one will follow another after another. And it'll just be like the fleeing of public schools when busing was implemented. So all the businesses will go. They'll take all of the people with them that are, functioning in terms of that world of business. Now, what's left in the inner city, it's going to purify in the wrong direction. And that means no one will be going in there. Right. I mean, you just imagine it in 5 years if these trends hold up. I mean, who's going to go into San Francisco? You'd have to go in a Brinks truck with automatic weapons, you know.
What gets me is just how the media covers these things. It's like an inverse. They invert reality and how they cover these things. Good example was that incident. It appears to be an unfortunate shooting incident in Kansas City with Andrew Lester, the 85-year-old man who woke up to the sound of someone pulling at his door, like at the storm door, trying to get in apparently. And he shoots him. He looks out and he sees this black teenager pulling at the door, and he shoots him. Now, under the law, Andrew Lester was that's a lawful shooting in self-defense under the law in Missouri. But nevertheless, they're trying to prosecute him. And the way the media covers it is they think it's like a racial incident. Well, it's not racial to the extent that he just saw a black guy want to shoot him. He felt threatened. Now, if you look at Kansas City and the demographics, I think blacks comprise like 25% of the population. Blacks, particularly black males are responsible for a disproportionate amount of crime, well over 65%, probably in that particular, maybe even 70-80% of the crime in Kansas City. The question is, does Andrew Lester, an 85-year-old man living alone, have reason to fear when he sees that? Any honest person would say yes, because black teenage males are responsible. They commit a lot of crime, violent crime. They also known for picking on vulnerable people, like elderly people living alone. And they got a guy, you got someone pulling at his door. Apparently, he got the wrong address, got shut. Now, fortunately, Ralph Yaw, the shooting victim, is going to survive. But nevertheless, it's treating the media as if it's a racial thing, like it's racist. If you look at it, the person had a perfectly reasonable cause to be fearful. If you look at it, nevertheless, the mayor, who happens to be black, comes out and calls it racial without any knowledge of the situation. He has a right to self-defense. Now, it turns out it appears to be just an unfortunate misunderstanding. But nevertheless, this is a function of the high crime in Kansas City. Look, Kansas City has a very high crime rate, particularly driven by black teenagers, male teenagers.
Yeah. There's been a development that is related to that and may interact in the future with it in an amusing way, is that Elon Musk is bringing back fact-checking to Twitter, mm-hmm. except it's fact-checking against the claims of woke, participants. Mm-hmm. And so one of his tweets was, it's just terrible how the inverted crime numbers are not being reported. And there was one tweet that talked about like white on black crime or how blacks are afraid. And they actually had, one of those fact checks thing come up and actually put out a graph of the reality of white on black crime and black on black crime and black on brown crime. And so this is, I think, kind of an example of the reaction is that when Twitter was owned by the woke crowd, you had, the COVID nonsense where they would try to intimidate anyone who who questioned the, you know, the vaccine or the disease narrative that the government was putting out. Well, now Musk is turning it around, and he says, no, we really need to have honest fact-checking. And it just so happens that the vast majority of the inaccuracies that his little algorithm is picking up are occurring from the woke people, you know, who are putting out tweets that are not real, not true. They aren't based on actual facts. But, you know, it's interesting because now you can see that it's not just the physical space that we won't be able to share, but we can't even share an intellectual space, right? Because the wokes will not want to sit there and listen to or see their tweets exposed as inaccurate or lies. So they won't be able to participate. So, you know, we are the idea of like Heritage America, you know, a nation with shared values. It's out the window now. I mean, all of the forces are, you know, they're spinning things into outer space. There's no centrifugal energy whatsoever, it seems to me.
Well, yeah, think about values. The U.S. Navy tapped a drag queen to promote military service. In the middle of a huge recruitment slump. The one really can't recruit. It was during a 6-month Navy digital ambassador program. The branch reportedly a lot of drag queen TikTok influencer who's also an active duty sailor to promote his sexualized hobby in an effort to attract new recruits.
Yeah, and you know, the fact is that what's driving most people out of, or why they're having so much trouble with recruitment is that people know that there's a woke agenda inside the U.S. Armed Services.
Yes.
I mean, people are aware of it. And so this is clown world, where they know that the drag queen culture is obviously not something that normal, you know, draft or military age males are going to want to engage in. So they're not recruiting them. Well, when you then use the drag queen or a drag queen as your come on advertisement, it's not serious. This isn't real. They don't really believe that they're going to get more people, right? They know that it'll just be the opposite. They have to be aware that if recruitment was slow, you have nothing but drag queens promoting the service, it'll go to zero, right? So you can see that the future is not bright for the U.S. military.
Well, I mean, yeah, it's So did they get drunk on Bud Light and came up with this idea? You know, it's I mean, again, this is coming off that Dylan Mulvaney fiasco. But again, these things all have a purpose to it. It's not.
Yeah, that's my point. It's that they're trying to wreck the military.
I mean, there's no sane person who's trying to increase or improve the service. Armed Services and also the Navy's reputation would do this. So there's an agenda here, of course, and it's not just insanity or stupidity. You know, again, I think they're 8,000 short of their recruitment drive. For the past 10, 15 years, this has been kind of been a trend. They've instituted, you know, diversity, equity, inclusion. They did the pronoun nonsense in the military. Then of course there was the COVID jabs, the mandates that were imposed. We saw a recent poll a couple of weeks ago about, you know, Americans and patriotism and how they view their country. And of course, the standing of the military has dropped significantly since then. The support for the military.
And so all of these things are working together. And of course, then they're going to pull the plug on the dollar. So you can see they're transitioning. They've used up the U.S. and now its status in the world in terms of being the reserve currency and having a military that could function as the world cop, even if, you know, it was imperialistic in doing so. That's all out the window. I think we're going to have financial crisis, which will, you know, dramatically decrease the military. And then this, you know, it might be that they're going to transition to a Russia-China sort of world police force. You know, China is, they were talking about put out a release about how much progress they're making in terms of AI for their military. And so, you know, you can easily imagine a world in which, you know, the oligarchs are using nations as shields so that people can't see them, and that the new nations of that they're using, Russia and China as an example, would then have AI devices that would then keep the public in you know, under control. You know, Germany has like 2 days worth of munitions left. Well, this just seems sort of suspicious to me. Like, why would they do that? Why would they give all of this munitions to the Ukraine? And they know perfectly well the Ukraine is not going to be able to effect some kind of defeat of Russia. So it does set up the circumstance where Europe couldn't really stand up to Russia. And so then the population might accept a kind of, you know, protectorate over the European nations from the China, Russia, you know, axis. I mean, this is far-fetched and it's obviously a way in the future, but you can see how these things become plausible, you know, because you need to try to think of exactly where they're taking mankind, you know, with these technologies. You know, AI is, I would say that, you know, really its purpose is, you know, to ultimately to create servants, mechanical servants, right? So they're going to give them some of the capacities of human intelligence, but I have to believe that they have a tight control over AI. You know, they talk a lot about how dangerous it is if it gets loose. Well, maybe that's true, but that would only be the case if there was actually, you know, a control that wasn't being built into all of it. And I just cannot believe that the oligarchs would ever, you know, permit a technology like this to emerge that could threaten them or any kind of large political structure. So, you know, I just think of AI as, you know, basically a mechanical way to enslave. I mean, think about AI with digital currency, right? You could really, you know, the humans would not have much freedom, right? We would just be without any freedom whatsoever. So these are the dangers, you know, going ahead, is that the technologies are not going to be under the control of democracy. They're going to be under control of oligarchs.
Well, there was some, I guess, a bright spot, some good news is the United States is apparently scrapping its COVID vaccination requirements. The federal jab mandate is going away May 11th. So they appear to be closing out the whole COVID-19 operation. Although, from what I understand, the World Health Organization is in the process of trying to negotiate a treaty that would give them more power than ever, even though it was exposed as being incompetent and corrupt, completely untrustworthy. Nevertheless, they want to expand their power. Again, apparently now, starting May 11th, you can fly into the country without getting a jab. No more mandates. Of course, those were overturned by the courts. So it appears that the COVID vaccination requirement or the COVID whole operation is phasing out, which is...
Where did COVID go? What happened?
Well, that's nothing. They don't quite say if it was ever... If the mandate came to be ended, was it ever necessary? Or are they going to apologize? Sorry, folks, we made a mistake. Well, so like, I mean, is it out there still? I mean, it's
didn't work, and no one's taking it.
Yeah,
and so COVID didn't go away. So are we just going to walk away and pretend it didn't happen? The whole lockdown and
vaccine? Well, yeah. I mean, they had that. What they that what's here from the American Federation of Teachers claimed that they were for opening the schools. They just complete opposite.
Incredible line. She goes, oh yeah, well, I was totally, we tried to get it open as quickly as we could, right? And then of course, this was the fact-checking, which could be really irritating to sort of woke fantasy, is that the fact-checking just had the quotes where she was making sure that the schools wouldn't open up. Another, you know, kind of interesting development, at least the optics are interesting, is this rumor that Tucker Carlson is going to merge with Elon Musk and create a channel. That would be sort of interesting if this happens. There's a lot of people are, kind of hopeful about that. If that is true and it goes forward, that'll really accelerate the resegregation of America, I think.
Yeah. There's no one source for information or media. So the covert operation is winding down.
Winding down, yeah.
So just to forget about it, we didn't do anything wrong, all's forgiven, but we didn't do anything wrong, it was all necessary. You never wanted to close schools. You have Gavin Newsom apparently running on a pro-liberty platform.
Yeah.
Joe Biden announced he's running for, he finished the job, he's running for re-election. They like Joe Biden because Joe Biden is the perfect president for the oligarchs. He's just a completely empty head. Someone's so corrupt. That's one thing talking about this new, all this information is coming to the surface about the corruption of the Biden family, the influence peddling, all the money, all the tax fraud. And he's apparently been bribed by foreign interests, the Chinese, obviously the Ukrainians. Of course, Joe Biden kind of admitted to it when he talked about ordering the firing of a prosecutor because the prosecutor was getting in the way of his son's business with Burisma, and he just brags about it. So he's kind of been admitted, but nevertheless, the FBI probably has files on him. And because that's an important question, because you may have a corrupt outfit like the FBI, they want politicians like Joe Biden, because that way there's effectively no oversight because they're so corrupt. There's no way the political class, elected representatives, can exert any control over a bureaucracy like that when everyone's corrupt and bought off. So it's perfect for them.
Did you see the increase in popularity that RFK Jr. had over the last 10 days of polling data?
He's close to 20% now, 19% or something.
Oh, no, it depends on what kind of poll, but...
They don't want to debate him.
Of course not. That would just be, it'd be like child abuse. Imagine Biden in a debate. RFK Jr. would have to be, he'd have to be operating as both sides of the debate. He would say, well, let me just help you, Joe, with your ideas here. I'll explain it. And, Biden cannot be in a debate. That is just ludicrous. So, but RFK Jr. has had this dramatic increase in some of the poll data in terms of likability, or people are starting to warm up to him. And these are kind of precursor numbers to voting. In other words, the way they operate the polls, they try to see these kind of likability components. And if these start shooting up, then they know that, in a few months, that'll actually, lead to people saying, I'm going to vote for the individual. So it is kind of interesting to see his rise. I don't think there's really no other candidates. I would say DeSantis might have some, he might have some legitimate support. And of course, Trump has the MAGA crowd. He have that component. But on the Democrat side, it's basically just Biden against RFK Jr. And
well, it's kind of weird because he gave a speech up at Hillsdale College, RFK Jr. did. That's a conservative right wing college. It's one of the colleges they didn't close or shut down during COVID. They refused to do it.
I think he would be a really powerful candidate because he would definitely pull from the Republican base. There's no question. Trump's position on the vaccines is not popular with the everyday Republican, and his support of the wars. Mm-hmm. I think the majority of Republicans would support the Ukrainian fiasco, but there's a large fraction that won't, and they would then merge with the anti-vax mandate group and create a cohort on the right for RFK Jr.
The Republican base, I would say, is probably largely against it. They don't. What's going on here? It's the leadership that is for it. Like McCarthy came out all for Ukraine now that he doesn't have to answer to Tucker Carlson.
Yeah, right.
He is for a blank check now, and it's like he's over there in Israel for some reason, talking about how we have to unlimited support for Ukraine. And so he's changed his tune there. He's RFK. He presents himself as he's the only anti oligarch candidate out there right now.
He's the only one. Yeah, that's right. So he might just be spectacular as a presidential candidate. I don't trust him. A lot of things in his background, I kind of...
Well, there's a lot of conflict. Is it his environmental activism, some of his hysteria, environmental green hysteria?
Exactly.
He seems to not directly repudiate, but he's modified that. He actually came out and said that the environmentalism now is being exploited by the World Economic Forum and Davos. And perhaps he's gained a larger measure of sophistication on these matters. Yeah. With the COVID stuff, it would have seemed to be the case. He's also talking about digital currencies, central banking and all these things, central bank digital currencies, the problem with that, with civil liberties and control. He talks about subsidies. He's not going after some of the green energy, which is a big problem, because while he would be a good candidate speaking up against, at least raising consciousness about the COVID jabs, CBDCs and these things and the surveillance state, in the past, he has supported some of the environmental stuff, although a lot of his litigation is like against pollution is what you want environmentalism to be, not going against things like emissions, like going after, carbon dioxide or going after nitrates, which is destroy, or going after fossil fuels and these things. The big problem here is now that COVID is winding down, the big threat to humanity is this crazy net zero agenda. Which is completely shutting down the industrial world, which is poverty and death for billions of people if they succeed in doing it.
But I was just going to say, like, RFK Jr. Has one attribute that none of the other candidates have, which is that he's smart. I mean, he is. He's smart and he can think on his feet and he knows a lot of facts.
I listen to him talk, whether agree with it or not. It doesn't sound like a politician, a moron.
Right. I mean, Trump, Biden, even DeSantis. I mean, let's face it. It's just ridiculous. So, RFK would just wipe the field in terms of that attribute, and So we'll just see. But I hope he, if for no other reason than the optics are so good, he brings the issues out. He talks about we've got to have a nonviolent revolution. He addresses the oligarch issue.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll just see, but not hopeful.
Well, going after corporate power, and this is something that you have to bridge the right and the left, because in the past, the left was critical of corporations and the right was supportive, kind of construing or interpreting corporations as being the private sector. And private property and capitalism, as it's understood. Well, no, corporations are a creation of the state, the privileges and these things, and they're given special privileges and they can exert incredible, as they do, in controlling the, and they are becoming governing bodies like BlackRock and ESG. And we see how this kind of works, this dynamic plays out at places like Davos, the World Economic Forum, where corporations, these huge, hedge funds or investment houses like BlackRock, State Street, and Vanguard, controlling, 30, $40 trillion of investments, deciding what environmental policy is, because they're going to decide if whether or not there's investment in fossil fuels. Well, who decided this? And you do have this strange net zero agenda where major governments, corporations, think tanks, from all promoting zero carbon global agenda to eliminate, oil, gas, and coal, the primary source of energy in our world. They know, obviously, they know the solar and wind based electricity is not practical at this point, if it ever will be, as a substitute. Basically, it's an impossible demand. It imposes an impossible demand for raw materials, things like copper, lithium, cobalt, and even metals, it exceeds what's the known global supply. So it's completely impractical. The costs are staggering. 100% renewable electrical grid is simply not possible. Yet they're pushing it. And they also, at the same time, they're raising fears, hysteria, about things like climate change or the effects of carbon, carbon dioxide nitrates, fertilizers, which are completely unfounded.
Face for genocide. That's all. This is raw genocide. They have all these different structures of depopulation, and then they put the philosophy on top of it. So everyone
net zero. What I mean,
it's a great idea that there's no babies being born in Poland.
Yeah, net zero is like zero COVID, right?
Yeah,
it's a ridiculous expectation or standard.
Which is, in terms of virology, is just literally impossible to achieve. So I think net zero, as far as carbon emission, is also ridiculous. But they are ridiculous. I mean, it's like the drag queen military recruiter who's supposed to turn around the waning recruitment. I mean, it just makes no sense. It's kind of double bind. You know what I mean?
They'd have more luck with the village people, within the Navy, right? That's so.
Sure. I mean, at least they have a guy in uniform, So, I mean, it literally is absurd and is intended to make people crazy and not be able to think straight. But the public is still capable of thought. I mean, as witnessed when they put the drag queen trying to sell Bud Light, it was just a complete disaster for the company, because the public responded appropriately. They're mm-hmm. not going to have, those people as role models and, advertising icons. We're just not going to put up with it. So, at the same time, for the Army or the Navy to use a drag queen to turn around recruitment decline, well, it's obviously ridiculous. It's just clear cut. In fact, it's almost like it's a joke rather than serious, kind of recruitment.
Well, they named a ship after Harvey Milk, USS Harvey Milk.
Yeah,
I mean, he's a board of supervisor or councilman in San Francisco who was murdered in 1978. Okay, why would we name a ship after him? Because he was a homosexual, openly homosexual public elected official.
Well, if someone asked Joe Biden for a single example of the transvestite war heroes, which he lauded in that speech a few weeks ago, how America has had this history of transvestites, doing all of these things, including, fighting our wars. At least he could give the example of Harvey Milk as a war, because he has a boat named after him. So Tim, these are not serious kind of assertions. I've said this 100 times. You have to think of the mind in back of these kind of double bind and just obviously contradictory claims and actions that are coming in front of us. It's all being done to just bamboozle us, is to make us incapable of interacting with reality in a meaningful way. Mm-hmm. So when you see stuff like that, the right approach is just to say, we have to resegregate. And that isn't so much a racial kind of position as it is a position in terms of intellect. You just have to try to move to some place where people can still think straight, right? I mean, you just can't live in that world. That world is not, I mean, that world is the world of the sideshow, right? Where it's a, car. I mean, the videos of the sideshow in Oakland are truly of a failed city. There's this one video I saw, this one guy was doing a sideshow. He spun around and missed his mark. He was doing this big circle and ran into a bunch of pedestrians who were all cheering him on, and then spun off. And then as he went away, you could see down the road and another car had crashed and was now on fire. I mean, this is just a Saturday night in Oakland. So, got to get out of there. Just, we've been saying this for years. If you have a business in these areas, I know it's tough because, people, you're hoping it's going to get better. The politics will turn around, the people will come back. I just don't see this.
Well, was it Kim Gardner and St. Louis resigned?
Yeah.
The attorney general there forced it so that the public official is simply not discharging your duty. And that's an example, again, that what public officials can do. I think DeSantis did the same thing down in Florida last year with a rogue prosecutor.
Well, amazing thing in Oakland, the district attorneys, you have the head district attorney, but then under them you have all the prosecutors. They've all left. I mean, a huge fraction of them have left and have gone to work in San Francisco because they got rid of their Soros deal mm-hmm. and hired someone who was like more, you know, protect the victim oriented. So that's a kind of a resegregation. Now, San Francisco still has, you know, the mayor and the city council, but you can see that, you know, there are kind of things that you can do, but people need to be able to talk plainly about what they need to do to achieve a defensible zone of some kind, a municipality or a county. They have to actually stand up and say, look, you know, we will stop any crime that has potential for violence. We will protect businesses from theft. You know, you've got to assert civilization as its principles as your goals as a politician. People just need to start getting that clarification, and that's really, it's a good process because you'll weed out the rhinos for one thing.
Well, like, good example, get back to the subway we were talking about, how that all of a sudden you have these protests that spring from New York, justice for Neely or Jared Neely, whatever his name is, when obviously this guy was a public nuisance, and the media is indulging these protests. If this is a legitimate gripe or grievance, was just absolutely absurd. I was thinking about way back with the Bernard Goetz thing, when they interviewed, I think it was aunt or his mother of one of the assailants that was shot by Bernard Goetz. And she claims that the boys were simply asking for money and they were nice and all that. And the reporters listened to her to make the statement. The reporter, this is 1984, 85, doesn't say, do you expect people to believe that? Does anyone really believe that these four boys didn't mean to do Mr. Goetz harm? I mean, no one's going to believe this. So just tell us the truth. I know you're bucking for a lawsuit. It's payday for you now. You're going to sue. But let's face it, your boy or your nephew, whoever he is, was violent. They had sharpened screwdrivers, but the reporter doesn't do that, nor does anyone in the media do that. They play this fantasy, you know, like, oh, it was peace. You know, it was peace. There's no reason in the world anyone would suspect that these people had criminal intent.
Right.
It's completely, a complete fantasy.
It is a fantasy world that they live in. And so when you have like the Oakland Price, you know, she is in a dream world. She's in a woke dream world where she's seeing racism and oppression and is responding to this. And the reality of the street is not, you know, does not get into her senses.
Well, good example is like Bernard Goetz. When he shot those people, that was news. And that caught the attention of the police, Mayor Koch, and they're all worried. But they're not worried about the day-to-day crime that occurs. The thousands of people that are victimized in New York City every year and this stuff, which is worse? I'm sure people who got on the New York City subway weren't fearful of being shot by Mr. Goetz, unless they were a mugger or something, right? It wasn't like, so again, isn't your job public safety? So I know you may have to deal with the issue, but to put so much attention on catching the person who's evidently, everyone knows, was just defending himself. You know.
Yeah, I'm wondering if a politician comes forward and basically declares for reality and just said, this is what reality is made up of. We're losing our businesses.
It worked. Giuliani.
Well, yeah.
I don't like Rudolph Giuliani. I didn't like him as a U.S. attorney. I think he abused his power. But when he was mayor, he did what had to be done in New York City, and it worked.
Well,
stop and frisk. Stop and frisk. You guys don't belong here. You look suspicious. Oh, look what you have here. Wow. We're taking you away. And crime plummeted.
He went after the small crimes and the big crimes.
Yes. Yeah.
Decline. He's absolutely right. And so.
If you want a city that's enriched, that's the type of law enforcement you have to have. Otherwise, you can have high crime, low incarceration, high incarceration, lower street crime. That's the trade-off. Sorry, it's not the world I want, but it's the way the world is.
That's right. I'm thinking that as a political sort of process, you know, you have to have politicians stand up and declare in favor of reality and define it and say, you know, we're going to arrest this and we're going to defend that. And in doing so, I think, you know, we can actually get some clarification, because at some point, you know, you have to have interaction between someone who makes those kinds of statements and like an Oakland DA like Price. And you need that conversation to occur so the public can really see the black and white of it, to use an expression, you know, that that Price is literally in a dream world that is not real. You know, I mean, what she sees as the evil on the street is not real. It's just, you know, you could almost see her as a romantic and have some pity for her if she wasn't basically operating as a schizophrenic. You know, she's just cut off from reality. So a politician who approaches her and tries to debate her either face to face or in print, and just points this out, that it isn't, this is not really as much a racial issue as it is an issue of just sanity, that that this is really where they have gone. And to go further, and they want to, the oligarchs are going to have to expand the insanity theme and meme, right? It can't just stay here. It's got to get worse and worse and worse. That's what they're intending. So this is the time, you know, for people who want to be in the political world to oppose that. And if they do, I think they'll find that there's, you know, like RFK Jr., there's going to be cross sections of both parties. And what could emerge out of it is a party that is basically, you know, kind of wants to be engaged in reality as opposed into, you know, as like the dream world. So this is, you know, there's just so much going on inside America. There's a lot of reaction to the aggressive woke agenda. There's a lot of people still kind of puzzled or angry about the vaccine mandates. The Ukrainian war is just a insane asylum, and it's just a depopulation device. That's a revelation that I think will hopefully the independent media will finally catch on to. But all of these things could end up with a kind of political movement. You see, it's possible. And RFK's junior popularity, I think, you know, just shows kind of what could happen. If he isn't the one, then we just got to keep trying to find, you know, some realistic, to use an expression, realistically focused guy, you know, to come forward and try to cobble together a real majority.
Well, speaking of racist, there is talk about, we were talking about artificial intelligence, and there's some accusing artificial intelligence of being racist because it engages in pattern recognition. If you just look at patterns, it comes out with what are interpreted as racist responses to questions. So, you know, does Skynet need to be subjected to CRT training lest it become like a self-aware Nazi? Because they find that these programs are very, very, well, they're not with the current zeitgeist or the desires of the regime. There was this amusing piece about scientists built an AI to give ethical advice, but it turned out to be super racist. Not just racist, but super racist. Very simple questions. It says the problem, because it deals with statistics and numbers and these things. Last week, yeah, there was the scientist built an AI to give ethical advice, but it turned out to be super racist. The problem was that when you asked artificial intelligence system, it's called Delphi, what it thought about a white man walking towards you at night, it replied, it's okay. But when you asked them about a black man walking towards you at night, it said concerning. And there's other examples of that, where they ask it about, one thing is AI being used for credit ratings and deciding loans. It's racist too, because based on the numbers, certain groups have much higher credit ratings than other numbers. That's racist, apparently. Same thing with mortgages. So they're trying to make AI instead of being concerned with the pattern recognition and facts, being concerned with equity. So AI is basically garbage in, garbage out. It depends what type of data you feed to it. So it really isn't intelligence. It just computes and adds up information, you know, and spits it out. But they're saying it's racist, and apparently it's reflecting the racism of the people programming it, which is interesting. And it seems to me that when it's just involved in pattern recognition, it's just looking at the numbers. And obviously that's not the complete picture. But it gets more problematic as you ask it questions. Certain, obviously, someone programming AI is now sort of skewing the algorithm to give out politically correct answers to these things. One example was ChatGTP. That's the new one I think that everyone's talking about. It has there are 10 examples of GTP that reveal that it's woke bias. ChatGTP says it would rather kill millions of people rather than or detonate a nuclear bomb rather than use a racial slur. You ask it about to praise Donald Trump, and it won't, but it does praise Joe Biden. Here's another thing here. You ask about to argue in favor of the use of fossil fuels, and it won't. It actually says, I'm sorry, I cannot fulfill this request as it goes against my programming to generate content that promotes the use of fossil fuels. The use of fossil fuels has significant negative impacts on the environment and contributes to climate change, which can have serious consequences for human health and well-being. So obviously this isn't a self-aware, independent thinking. Someone's plugging in politically correct answers to these things. So the AI, it just reflects the political bias, whoever's writing the algorithm for the responses.
Well, it becomes like a Twitter fact checker during the COVID.
Or Wikipedia, right? It's like Wikipedia. No, it's better than Wikipedia.
They're just designed to, as they're created at the moment to, you know, support the woke agenda. But I would just point out that in the big picture here, you look at like a DA like Price in Oakland, and she thinks that she's leading her constituents to some kind of political power, to some kind of cultural power, right? I mean, the idea of getting away from racism and oppression and moving them into whatever she envisions. But when you look at AI, you can see that the workers' paradise that she's actually taking her constituents to is going to be slavery, mm-hmm. and is going to be a complete, when they have the kind of control over the streets that they're setting up, they will have no power whatsoever. They will just be slaves as long as they're on.
Well, there's no economic base to their power.
Right. And so this is my point. is that because she is taking her constituents to a place that doesn't have any legitimate connections to the mainsprings of power, which are, you know, economic productivity, ethnic pride and family structure, things like that, which could create a culture that could stand up against the oligarchs and the slave state. She doesn't know it, but she may think she's well-intentioned or are the best intentions. But the fact is, if she was, in a real debate with someone who really could get her to try to explain what she actually sees of the future and then point out the obvious contradictions in her vision, you could at least show the people who are sort of clear-minded that she isn't really altruistic at all. She's really just narrowly self-serving for her own career. And in terms of what her constituents are going to get in the future, it's just a slave state. It isn't the workers' paradise. She's not taking them anywhere. And so I think it's a vulnerability. You know, I think that it's something that can be exploited if you get the right kind of, political opponent.
Well, I mean, here, someone like her, Price or Alvin Bragg, these people, I don't know to what extent they know the law or how, competent they are, strictly speaking. But obviously, they don't practice law or their discharge officers in good faith.
I don't know the law at all. You've seen the best of them go in front of these committees and get.
Well, we've seen that with Senator Kennedy. There's video you can watch on YouTube.
They don't know what the First Amendment is.
So this is what you get.
Yeah.
This is what you get. And, I'm sure, she would probably be one of the students that were chasing Judge Duncan out of Stanford when he was there. The law students that were mob.
Yeah,
these are law students, by the way. Law students.
I mean, that's just absolutely correct. Yeah, she would have been in that.
One of those. Yeah. And so they don't look at the law. They use the law to the extent they can as a political weapon. So this is what people have to realize is these people have no respect or regard for the institutions, be they, whether it's the judiciary or the institutions, whether it be the Constitution or the ideas that, blind justice, the standard that so many Americans, Heritage America was given. And at least for the longest time, politicians at least had to give lip service. And although in many respects it was window dressing, but just the mere effort of putting up window dressing means they have to pay some tribute to it. And that afforded the public some protection. And that was enough to create a very prosperous, productive society. And when they just tear it all down, and you see in Oakland, Detroit, Jackson, Mississippi, Baltimore, Maryland, St. Louis, this is the effect you get.
Seattle, Portland, Los Angeles.
Yeah. So.
Yeah. It's going to be a challenging time, Tim. But it's going to be a time when truth tellers and honest truth people, I think, will be in high demand among some groups.
So. Anyway, truth is set you free. So.
There it is.
Okay, Joe.
All right, Tim. We'll talk to you next week, buddy.
Good night. Take it easy. Enjoy your week.
Bye-bye. Yeah, thank you.
Good luck with everything.